Next item is from the Employee Benefits Work Group, requesting authorization to amend sections 17.18 and 17.184 of the Maquis County Code of Ordinances as it pertains to sick leave policies regarding sick allowance accrual and payout of credit at retirement. This is also referred to personnel.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Mark Grady, Deputy Corporation Counsel. I won't belabor this unless you want me to, with respect to the history of what we've done in the past with respect to the vacation and sick allowance for returning employees and for new employees and current employees. The one piece that had been talked about at the county board floor, the kind of meeting that had never been finalized, was whether or not there should be a cap on the accrual of sick allowance in the future, and so how much. And my understanding is that Chairman Holloway and County Commissioner Wigley reached a meeting of the minds, at least between the two of them, with respect to the policy that would be appropriate. And the Employee Benefits Work Group has discussed these policies in the past and agrees with the proposal that's in front of you. That proposal is to cap the future accrual, or the cap the accrual of sick loans at $960. So an employee starting work for us next year will be accruing sick loans the same way they do now. We're not changing the accrual rate, 3.7 hours per pay period for most employees. But it will reach a cap of $960, which is 10 years. We accrue about 96 hours a year, so it will take 10 years to reach the cap for an employee. For employees who already have more than 960 hours, they would stop accruing any future sick loss. So if you're an employee who has on January 1st 1,500 hours of sick loss, you will not get any more until such time as perhaps you use it because you have some health condition while you're working there and your balance drops below 960. Then you would then begin reaccruing until you get 960. But for someone who's already over 960, they will be frozen at the number they have now. Then the other piece of this is that sick allowance that you are granted, which you accrue beginning in January. So the first pay period of January, you get 3.7 hours of sick allowance. If and when you retire from the county, you will not be paid for that 3.7 hours. And you will not receive credit for it towards the value of health insurance, depending on which category you're in. And so any sick allowance accrued beginning next year, January 1, will not provide you a benefit at the time. This does not affect in any fashion the sick allowance that you've already accrued prior to January 1st for future accruals. We are not changing and we cannot legally change retroactively the rules that apply to sick allowance you've already accrued. The other reason this ordinance amendment is as long as it is because as with the rules and as with other benefits, we are incorporating into the ordinance the provisions of the collective bargaining agreements. Again, as with all of these things, excepting by the sheriffs and firefighters. So that we have these provisions memorialized into the ordinances. And so every union's provisions are a little bit different, and so it makes the ordinances a little long, but it's all there in one place now, and you can look up the benefit in the ordinance going forward. One last change is what I call an accounting change, or it's meaningful. The general rule that we use for employees who use sick allowance while they're working here is that when you retire, we look back at what's left of your sick allowance, what you've accrued, what you still have in your balances, and we have to figure out how to pay that out for the prior accruals. And we have created over time varying what I would call buckets of sick allowance. We have used what is commonly referred to as a first-in, first-out principle. So the first hour of sick allowance you've accrued and haven't used is paid at one rate, and as you use it, it comes out of that first bucket. This is a little confusing to explain, and if you'd like, I can probably do it visually on board. Now, I understand there's been objections in the past to doing things on board, but I'm preserved, but I didn't have a good example. Draw a diagram for you in the documents. The point is for the AFSCME members, their contract had a last in, first out rule, which was more favorable to the employee, less favorable to the county. And with the ending of the collective bargaining ordinance provisions, we are aligning them with everyone else in this first in, first out principle. So that that is the other policy change that is embedded in this proposal report. With that, I think I'll stop unless you want me to talk more.
Any questions?
Got it.
Oh, I'm sorry. Supervisor Mayo, followed by DeRoyan.
My concern that it brought to my attention, for those employees after 1994, they do not get health insurance, and they was accumulating their sick time to purchase health insurance when they leave Milwaukee County. You just stated if they have 1,500 hours, that would no longer go for the health insurance for them, correct?
Any amount they've accumulated prior to January 1st, they can still use. So if you're an employee who was hired in 1994 and you accumulated $1,500, and you don't use any more from this day until the day you retire, you still have the value of that $1,500 you can use towards sick allowance at retirement. However, anything you accumulate from January 1st forward, let's say you worked here 10 more years and you accumulate another 960 hours, that 960 cannot be used. You will not.
But Mr. Grady, Mr. Chairman, you stated that once you have that 1,500, you will not accumulate any more sick time. And that's what you stated to me just minutes ago.
That's true. With the cash, you will not accumulate any more. Complicated. You have 1,500 hours on January 1st. If you didn't touch that while you worked here, you would still have that 1,500 hours applied to the value of sick allowance every time. If during your remaining employment, the next 5 years, 10 years, or every year, you use 1,000 of those dollars for some reason, and now your balance drops down to 500, you then will be able to accumulate again back up to 960. So then when you retire, 500 hours is available to you to use at retirement for value of sick allowance, and the other 460 is not, because that was accumulated after January. It goes to this, what I would call a bucket concept. It's hard to describe. Most employees are now going to have three buckets of sick allowance to which different rules apply.
I need a little bit of time. Do we need to vote on this at this moment? I would like to prefer to lay this over and then sit down with you so I really can understand a little bit better. I have a motion to lay this over to the next month.
Okay. Supervisor DeBrun.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would tend to support that motion unless I hear something different from you, Mr. Grady, because when I went through the materials, and obviously it was yesterday instead of, so I haven't had days to research this, but there wasn't a single explanation in any of the materials as to why 960 was picked instead of 700 or 1,200 hours. There wasn't any explanation about why the different component pieces. Now, you could surmise explanations, but I don't understand. I would like some information from the county. I'm glad the county executive and the county board chairman agree on something. That's great. But I don't know why, what led them to agree to it, and what's the benefits of picking that number versus another. And if you have some, I know the work group looked at it, and you're the chair of that. If you have some of that information, that'd be very helpful.
Chair, Supervisor, I was trying to find, we provided a prior report, and I don't know whether it was in the written report or whether it was a verbal statement made, but the employee benefits work group did have members of the work group, I think they asked, actually went out and looked at other public entities in our area and looked at accruals of sick allowance and policies of sick allowance. And 960 hours is a fairly common number among other governments. That is the primary reason the work group supports that number. I can't speak to Chairman Holliday or Vice Chairman Baker, but the work group is 960 is a comparable figure for other governmental entities.
Did you have a chance? Can I continue?
Yes, go ahead. You said the floor.
Thank you. Did you have a chance to look at when someone, for example, who's a county employee, has a severe chronic illness that would require extensive use of sick hours? Is that 960 in the ballpark for what our chronically ill employees might need? I mean, is there any attachment to kind of our actual experience in the county, or was that either something you guys didn't think to do or too in-depth of analysis to really be able to perform?
Well, I guess the simple answer I would give you is that 960 hours, I believe, is approximately 6 months worth of time.
Right.
Right, and that's
so
pretty.
It would cover a 6-month illness. had one that large that you were on. There are obviously occasions where people are on longer than that, but I think they're the exception, not the norm. But that's purely an experiential statement from me. I don't have data.
Okay. And then to follow up on that, if someone had a chronic illness that, you know, 4 or 5 years in a row, they're off for a month at a time or two, where you get to that 6 months, then it's done, right? They don't have any other option,
well,
correct?
If someone is in that situation where they're taking, you know, a week every month or a week every couple of months or whatever they're doing, they are, at the same time they're using it, they're still accumulating more. So,
okay. So the cap doesn't stop them from accumulating while utilizing what they've already earned.
As long as they're underneath that cap, right? So if you have $800 and you're using, you know, 10 hours every pay period, you're also getting 3.7. So you're decreasing your allotment by 6.3.
Okay. But once they use 960, they don't earn anymore. Once they hit 960, they don't ever earn anymore, even though they've spent down the cap to 800 again, or spent down their hours.
If you spend down below the cap, you will earn back up.
Okay.
It's basically, the number is whatever you have on January 1st or 960, whichever it is.
Okay.
It's the number you have on January 1st, and then if you use it, you can go back up to 960.
Okay. And then my other question was dealt with the fiscal impact. Did you calculate in or attempt to calculate in the practical result of people not being able to save their unused sick hours for insurance once they leave, that they, in all likelihood, they would start using their sick days? I mean, that's just a human phenomenon. So has that been calculated in, or how did you look at that?
Well, the fiscal note, which I'd like to see, Nancy, so I have to let him speak.
Okay.
The fiscal note, but I know the work group did discuss the phenomenon you're talking about, the risk that employees who are not going to get a benefit of their retirement will inappropriately burn their sick loans or use their sick loans while they're employed. And that's a risk. It's a risk that other governments have similar policies. Not every government, but other governments have similar policies. And I think the work group's feeling is the way to adjust that is through appropriate administration of human resource policies in this country. Rather than putting it there so we affect employee benefits and employee behavior through giving this pot.
Mr. Would you mind, Mr. Maskey, response?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. When I looked at the fiscal analysis of this, one of the things that I looked at was the amount of sick leave usage and the amount of balance that, in essence, was going into an accrued liability balance each year. And what I was finding was that approximately 2/3 of the employee base was using a lot of their sick leave during the year. A lot being a majority of their balance during the year, or were using portions of it, or, you know, let me rephrase that. Two-thirds to three-quarters were at least using a portion of their sick leave balance each year. And for the people that, so we took a look at that from the standpoint of would people use it to a greater extent now based upon this new policy. And we believe there may be an incidence for that to occur as a result of this. But based upon the fact of the sick leave usage that was already occurring, I saw some fiscal impact from that, but not as much of a large impact from that. Where you tend to get your fiscal impact from that is in those areas such as in the sheriff's department, in the 24/7 operations, where you have to bring in somebody else in additional to cover for somebody who is sick for that day, where you have to bring in a nurse on overtime at PhD, where you have to bring a deputy sheriff in to cover for somebody like that. And in those areas, we've looked at that. That will increase the overtime in those areas of having that type of sick leave. But what we've noticed is that there already is an incidence of sick leave that is occurring. It may increase the sick leave usage that will occur. But comes as how much more in that.
The only comment I'd want to make on that is I understand that that part of that would be totally inappropriate use, like someone going golfing, because they have an extra sick day they want to use up. But frankly, there's also, in my opinion, very real pragmatic impacts that I don't consider necessarily abusive. I was a young mom. I had three young kids at home. I was working. My husband was working. He made three times what I made. And one of the kids got sick. I used my sick day to take care of him. That's reality. So, and for some of our employees, this versus trying, you know, having the other spouse who makes three times taking a sick day, there's a practical impact of that that I just wanted to say I don't think is automatically abusive or, you know, wholly inappropriate. It's just a reality. And I think that'd be particularly true of single parents, people without anyone else to take care of their child. And so I do think there will be an impact. And I guess what I'm hearing from you is that, is there an assumption that that impact would be absorbed? I don't want to inflate it if it's not a major concern. I just know that in my life cycle, my first job, I used every single sick day because either I was deathly ill or I had kids who couldn't go outside of the house. So I'm just assuming someone else would be in that situation.
And I did not take, you know, my purpose in doing the calculation was to look at the impact on the liability of what was occurring there.
Okay.
My purpose was not looking at the amount of the increase in usage. But one of the things that I noticed is there's 4,100 people that have a sick leave balance or are getting sick leave during the year. 540 of those people have balances greater than 960 hours. And then for the other people underneath that, some of those people go from zero, you know, in a range continuing up. So what I noticed as a result of looking at this is that there already is a large group of the people that are using sick leave for some purposes. They are sick. They're taking a sick day. They're using it. They're using the amount already. The reason right now we have an unlimited cap that's going forward, and you have 540 people that have gone over the cap that we're establishing at this point in time. The 960 hours came from a review that we did of other governments within the state, you know, within the state of Wisconsin, other local municipalities and other governments. And that's where what we were finding is a typical balance of where they were at. It will have some type of an impact, you know, if you have a higher instance, it may be a natural thing for somebody to say, you know, look, I'm not going to be able to use this balance at the end of the year. I won't be able to save it for anything. I might as well use more of my balance since I'm already at my 960 cap. And that's a natural thing to occur. But where the fiscal impact will be is especially in the 24/7 operations. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You could have a fiscal impact in other departments where they get a higher incidence of sick leave that occurs. Mm-hmm. And how would they offset that? They're going to ask for more positions or new things, you know, other things to be added, or the ability to use overtime in their department. They're still expected to be, you know, fiscally managed then, but I'm just saying that departments are already managing somewhat to this incidence that's already occurring. And would there be a higher amount potentially? Can we measure it? We can look at some things, but I don't know if we can completely measure it.
And I'm just a little more sensitive about, you know, those type of costs, because when we adopted the pension scandal enhancements, the first massive expense that wasn't calculated into the cost of those adopted resolutions was sick leave, was the sick leave impact. So I go back 10, 11 years to that experience. And that's why I was particularly concerned to make sure that the sick leave component was really costed out, because those departments were hit with a massive whammy. And this is not anywhere near that level. I totally grant that. And I have a lot of respect for your work, Mr. Mansky, and I'm a lot more comfortable now. I just wanted to make sure that there wasn't some major hidden bump that we were missing.
Go ahead.
I'd just like to echo, maybe say the same thing in a different way that Mr. Mansky said. Setting aside 24/7 operations, If an employee calls in sick, they get paid that day. The same way they come in and work. And so for most departments that are not 24/7 operations, there's really not a fiscal impact of an employee using the sick allowance versus getting paid that day. County pays them either way, taxable or not. The impact is actually that now there's one less day of sick allowance to be paid in retirement, so it's a savings for that for those departments. It's the 24/7 operations where if there is a change in employee behavior, then it might have an ongoing fiscal impact as opposed to retirement. And so, can we predict what the change in behavior is going to be? No. And I didn't mean to imply that all the sick allowance is being used. I was just responding to your question about possible behavioral changes among employees given the lack of payment at retirement. And again, because of the way this is coming in, I think that change will only be gradual. It's going to affect new employees more than it's going to affect current employees. So if there is any change in behavior, I think it's more likely later down the road.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Supervisor Mayo, and then we'll go to our speakers. Okay, we have two individuals who would like to speak to item number 9. First is Candace Owler.
Somewhere along the line here that some process could be developed for some kind of consultation, which is completely legal, to do some meet and confer processes where we could at least have some. So the layover at least allows that. So I would appreciate that. So we have a lot of concerns about this proposal. The biggest concern, I would say, and again, I just saw it yesterday, is not the cap of 960, which is clearly significantly better than the last cap that you were talking about. But the change that that is really important to recognize, and that is that all future hours are not going to be able to be used to pay for health insurance upon retirement. And we have people who have been here, let's say 10 years or so, and they have 10, 15 more years to work. They are kind of we're counting on this. They came to work here with this belief that this was a benefit that they would have, that the sick bank would be used. We knew that we traded it away, and ours was 95, so not 94, but we understood that we bargained that away. We gave up the fully paid health benefits for the employees using their sick bank. They don't get it paid out, but they get to use it. And so I believe it's important to make a change like that effective only for new hires, because then they understand when they come here, this is the type of benefit package. But I can only speak, of course, from what I know the most about, which are nurses. And if you were to go to other hospitals in the area, the nurses, the comparable nurses, and your auditors can probably confirm this, can make $6 to $10 more an hour. People come to work in Milwaukee County, the nurses, knowing that they will make significantly less in their wage, but it is offset by a variety of benefits. Some is pension, some is health. You are about to change the health so that you'll be paying perhaps more than our nurses at St. Francis, so that's a wash on the health. So you come back to some of these retirement benefits. So I'm hoping that when we do take a look at this, that you will, even if you make the cap, and I think as was pointed out here, there are like 3 or 4 different moving parts to this proposal. You could do the cap but not make the other changes, for example. And you could do the all new hours, the employees hired in the future to have the cap and can't use it and doesn't get it paid out or don't use it for health insurance. There are various options you could do here. And we'd like to have more opportunity to prevent something like this. And so, but those are our thoughts at this point about the biggest concerns we have over this proposal. So thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Penny Secor.
Penny.
I am again kind of saying what Ms. Alvarez said is that we were not part of this group. We had no input into it. We had no way of even knowing what was happening until yesterday. And that's what basically came up. And we would also request a layover. But I think that there are some very important things that we need to look at in here is that you talk about sick leave, but understand what sick leave is. Is the employee that came in with the sniffles when the line was around the block for people getting, you know, funding for flooding that we had. It's the person that comes in because they know they have a caseload of 400, and if they're not there, it may not get looked at for another week. We are talking about the best of the best employees that you have here who have the 60 things. They're the ones that came in. They're the ones that have the loyalty to the county and said, I'm going to come in every day and work. These are not just statistics. These are your loyal employees who may have come in when they didn't feel like it, they were eligible for it. And then also, I think the other issue that you have is that with any cap that you put on this and you say you're not going to earn any more after this cap, oh, I am now going to penalize my best employees because they have saved their sick leave, and I am going to give the employees who may have used their sick leave or haven't been employed long enough to build up any kind of a name, but we're going to give it to you. So I think that you have some real issues with what's on the table right here, and I would also ask for it to be laid over and also to have, you know, the employees be part of the work group and talk for them. We get a lot of input and we will be happy to help you.
Ms. Tohart. Supervisor Smith.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was the person who kind of questioned these things from the very beginning, and I thought we were, and I really wasn't approached by labor, although I certainly, Ms. Ali, I thought brought up some good points at the beginning. I mean, you know, she had some points to make, but the benefits work group questioned some things too. So I was kind of taking questions from their perspective as well. So, you know, we threw out these figures. I remember on board day, and we've had a lot of discussion about this. This is a pretty complex issue, and it has a lot of ramifications. So it's not an easy one. It's a hard one to understand. I think most people just say, well, whatever, okay? And we have good benefits, and we understand because an abuse happened, that's why a lot of this stuff came up. A lot of times, unfortunately, bad things have to come up for us to look at things and to make some changes. So I don't equate it with what happened before, certainly. I thought the work group, now the work group is, you know, you were on the same page on most of this stuff. The only question really was on you know, how many hours, and we looked at different governments, said is 960 too much or should it be less, and so the work groups kind of come to this. So I'm kind of a little convoluted here because I presume the work group took the some of the points that were made today in consideration, and I guess they felt that this wasn't the way they were going to go. I asked those questions that were kind of answered today somewhat, but they didn't. I don't know how far we've gotten on them. So I want to make sure we camp, and this is always a difficult situation. I do appreciate the very last comments, is that we want to make sure that sick leave isn't abused, but then by camping, you do understand the people who do come in and do the work, and that's where the problem lies. I mean, I don't know if there's a magic bullet here, by the way, because it's a hard thing, and we heard people say, I don't know how behavior is going to happen. I think departments really have to work on that internally already. So I know if the work group has spent a lot of time on this, so they've had a lot of things to do. So I know I'm still caught kind of between making sure we're making right decisions. I do have to have some trust in the people we're asking to analyze these kind of things, but I do appreciate a couple of last comments that were made as well. So I'm convoluted as usual. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no more questions, Supervisor DeBrun.
Is the motion to lay over to next cycle, or is it to lay over to the call of the chair? What's the
next
exact
cycle? Next cycle.
I was going to ask for the clarity. Thank you.
Okay. I also have a concern because I think that these changes need to happen. So I'm not disagreeing with the changes, actually. I do wish we had in writing rationale for what the exact provisions are. I think that's something that's lacking, even though there might be a lot of understanding as to why the different pieces were chosen amongst the parties that met. I also, the whole issue of meet and confer, I'm not an expert on, and I know that this isn't necessarily the place to force that through this committee, but I think that the personnel committee and the county executive really need to start looking at that as an option. I don't support the deunionization in the state that the governor has done, and that is a potential viable option to have the unions involved. And obviously, they weren't involved in this change. They haven't been involved in some of the other changes that we have adopted, so it's not that the county executive is unilaterally proposing changes without talking to the unions. The board has adopted things as well. But I really think we've got to figure out a way through the county exec and the personnel committee to have some reasonable opportunity for unions before decisions are voted on to have some input. And that doesn't mean we're going back to negotiations and signing off and violating the state statutes. I mean more of the meet and greet type thing. So they've got me on that piece, because the other thing we also used to do, even when it wasn't a negotiable item, we've laid things over for a cycle for years if union members or affected employees didn't know they were happening. That's been a courtesy in county government for years. So, on the other hand, I know this started in May. So I guess my question to you, Ms. Torres, is if there was a one-month layover in order for some of the unions that are still operating to sit down with the administration to have some dialogue as to what this actually means, would that be something that the county executive would be willing to do? Or is that something at this point, even though it wouldn't be formally meet and confer, which I think is a bigger proposal, is that something they'd be willing to do or not?
If that is the policymaker's decision, we will absolutely meet with them, but they have weighed in on this issue. You have a registered letter from Ms. Owley requesting a six-month, I'm pulling this from my memory, and hopefully staff can confirm if that's something they're comfortable with. But I think we have a letter requesting a six-month period from them to address things such as maternity leave and people who have excessive chronic conditions. There has been, I think, a good dialogue between the unions and the executive, the board, and I would assume to some extent the employee benefit work group. I'm not part of that. I don't know what discussions have occurred there, but I know that they have taken into account what other unions have negotiated to get contracts with state and other municipalities in finding their own solutions to this problem. So,
last question. Is there any significant cost to delaying one more month?
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, at this time of the year, I think laying it over 1 month actually brings you to your finance meeting in December, meaning it will be just before Christmas that the county board would take this matter up for something that's scheduled to go into effect January 1. So keeping that in mind, being able to notify employees of the change, and I was talking to staff earlier, it doesn't take away any benefits they've accrued. However, they just wouldn't accrue any additional benefit after January 1. So it's so the layover, if the board, it could be a point where at some point you're acting on something that was retroactive. Board doesn't take action on it in December, or it needs to be modified to a change to a different date of effectiveness.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Supervisor Mayo.
Mr. Chair, I prefer the layover to continue. There's questions I have. I would like to refer to other the members who would affect, but Mr. Grady came and said he was going to show us pockets. He's going to write, I wish he had some stuff that he could write down and give us information. If I'm going to vote for this today, I will vote no. I prefer we'll make a sound decision and make sure all my concerns and the people who came to me, their concerns are addressed. And that's the reason why I want a layover.
Okay. Seeing no more. Ms. Allen?
Well, given as I've been referenced a few times, I feel the need to respond. And I sent one letter, which you have a copy of, which was when this first came up. And this is about vacation. There was a number of issues there that I asked that you might take some consideration. I've had not one call, not one communication from the county exec's office about any of that information, nor from anybody else. I've heard Supervisor Schmidt make reference to, you know, various concerns, including something I raised about no long-term disability.
Right.
But to suggest that we've had any kind of dialogue like this is wrong.
Any further questions?
Mr. Chair, I want to make sure you understand. I have the call of the chair.
Okay.
Lay this over to the call of the chair.
Okay.
Because I want to make sure I get all the information properly, that we have everything for everybody.
Okay. So, Supervisor Mayo has moved call of the chair. Mr. Grady, you can hopefully get us that information in a timely manner. We can pick this up again during the budgeting process on November 2nd. Will you be able to supply supervisors with the information they need and answer the questions that have been raised today?
Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to meet with anyone who has questions, including Ms. Owley. With respect to the written information that you're asking for, what I've heard, and I just want to confirm what I've heard, you're asking for a written explanation of how the 960 hours was arrived at, and I can certainly supply that. I'm not sure if you're looking for something more detailed in terms of how this works. Again, I could do that right now, or I can try and put that in writing. It's hard to do in writing, frankly.
Well, if you can meet with supervisors, then I guess
let me put it another way. I can do it in writing, but it's easier to understand. Just like graphs are easier to understand, it's easier to understand in a visual way.
But you can put those visuals on paper. You can put your bucket.
I can't. Maybe I can find somebody else who can.
And then also the other concerns that you have of the cap and stuff. I will talk to you. I'll be here Friday. I would like to meet with you Friday.
Okay. If you can just
tomorrow
meet, yeah. You can meet with supervisors on the committee.
Sure.
That would be best.
Whatever you like. That's fine.
Supervisor DeBrun?
I just think it's a mistake to have major benefit changes without some rationale for why the changes are proposed in writing. So I would, I'm not talking about a 40-page epistle, but, you know, there are some major changes, and I would appreciate some rationale in writing for what they are. I get the financials, you've done that, but that's my request, and I don't know if that's how the committee feels, but, you know, in the end, we're responsible for what we adopt, and if it's not even reduced to paper, I think there could be a potential problem long term.
Thank you. There was a motion by Supervisor Mayo to lay over to the call of the chair. Madam Clerk, will you call the roll?
On the motion, Supervisor DeBruin?
Aye.
Mayo?
Aye.
Schmidt?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Ramon West?
Aye.
Mr. Chair?
Aye.
Motion to lay over to call the chair, 6-0.
Okay. Madam Clerk, can you take items 10 and 11